Go to the end of Platform 9 on King's Cross Station in London. To your left is an ornate entrance leading to some old stone steps. At the bottom of those steps is what looks like an old disused workshop. But step inside, and you will find a chilling world of crime, deprivation, lies, and murder. The Waxwork Emporium of Horror isn't open to the public. It's a place where wax models, or call them dummies if you like, are stored when they are not on display. And here you'll find serial killers, like this man, the son of Sam. Ah, here's a monster. One of the vilest men to have ever walked the earth. Adolf Hitler. Oh yes, this one is instantly recognizable. Al Capone, the gangster who terrorized Chicago during the Prohibition. But others need a little introduction. I take this gentleman. He looks unassuming enough, ordinary. He certainly wouldn't stand out from the crowd. On his head he wears a bowler hat, and his clothes are dark and respectable. He has a sizable mustache. His complexion is pale. He's middle-aged, and the virility of youth is no longer present in his eyes. In his hands there are two tickets. They are for a long sea journey, from the Belgian port of Antwerp, across the Atlantic to Quebec, on the east coast of Canada. They were for a man and a woman, but for this couple, it was just the final leg of a long and murderous journey that started many months ago when Hawley Harvey Crippen met and fell in love with Ethel Deneve.
The bus, Hawley. The bus, it's here.
I can see it, Hawley. I'm not blind and stupid. Well, get on there. Get on then, Hawley, quick.
You first, Cora, darling.
Darling, darling. Don't darling me. Just get on. Get on.
King's Cross, Euston Road, Warren Street, Tottenham Court Road, Oxford Street, all aboard. Tickets from Camden.
Two to Oxford Street, please.
That'll be threepence, if you please. Thank you, sir. Anyone else for tickets?
We should have walked. I told you we should have walked. But no, you had to catch the bus. I could have used that money to...
I was only thinking of you, Cora. I know how much your feet bother you when you walk any distance. And anyway, I was running late, Cora.
All you ever think about is yourself, Hawley Harvey Crippen. You don't think of anybody else, nobody. Certainly not me.
Well, that's not true, Cora. I'm always thinking about you. I thought of no one else for nearly 20 years, ever since we met.
And all you ever think about is your fancy piece, that backstreet tart from your surgery. The one with that stupid French name.
Leneve. Ethel Leneve. That's her name, Cora, and she's not my fancy piece. I don't know what gives you that idea. You have all these things going on inside your head. It's all nonsense. Nonsense, I tell you.
But you're not the only one with secrets, you know?
What do you mean, not the only one with secrets?
Nothing, I didn't mean anything. Just a figure of speech.
That wasn't a figure of speech. You did mean something. Tell me, what did you mean, Cora?
Oxford Street, anyone for Oxford Street?
Look, it's our stop. Quick, or we'll miss it.
Cora, what did you mean? Tell me, I want to know.
Nothing, I tell you. Absolutely nothing. Look, I can't stand around talking all day. You've got to open your surgery, and I got a meeting at the Music Hall Ladies Guild. See you at home, 6 o'clock, and don't be late. Peter and Clara Martinetti are coming for supper.
Hawley Harvey Crippen was very much the hen-pecked husband. When Cora Makamotsky had married him, she had expected great things. A luxurious lifestyle. Dancing and singing at the best schools money could buy. Fame and fortune on Broadway and in the west of London. Nothing would be out of Cora Crippen's reach. But when those great things did not materialize, she became resentful. That resentment was directed at her husband, whom she blamed for everything. The pleasant three-story house in Hilldrop Crescent, the comfortable lifestyle provided by her husband's surgery, and the friends she had made at the Music Hall Ladies Guild. All meant nothing to her. These were just the first rung of the ladder. And Cora Crippen, or Bella, as her friends at the Ladies' Guild called her, had been aiming for nothing but the top.
Where have you been, Hawley? I've been worried. I've been waiting nearly half an hour.
Cora, that witch of a woman. She's had me running errands since I stepped out of bed. I had to catch the motor bus or I'd really have been late. Cora insisted upon coming with me, and took forever to get made up. I'm really sorry I'm late, Ethel. You know I like nothing more than those minutes with you before the surgery opens, but...
Shh! We still have a few minutes before the first appointment. Close the door, Hawley.
Oh, Ethel.
Hawley.
Ethel LaNeve was everything that Cora Crippen wasn't. At 27, she was 10 years younger. Slim, attractive in a certain light, intelligent, and more than anything, she loved Hawley Harvey Crippen with all her heart.
I can't go on like this. I don't want to be with Cora anymore. I want to be with you, Ethel. Not just for a few minutes here and there, but forever and for always. Oh, I love you so much.
I know, Hawley, and you know that I love you too. More than life itself.
You're right, Ethel. More than life itself. Yeah. More than life itself.
The seed of an idea had been planted. Over the coming days, it will be nurtured by constant nagging of a domineering wife. And an ordinary man, just like the kind of man you could sit next to on a motor bus, will start to harbor extraordinary thoughts.
So the drunken fella bumps into Hawley, and Hawley slips on what the horse had just done, and all the turnips fall into the canal. Oh, you're so funny, Belle. You should have been on the stage. I was on the stage, silly.
That must have been terribly embarrassing, old chap.
Cora exaggerates. Wasn't quite as bad as all that, Cora.
Oh, yes, it was. I couldn't stop laughing. Oh, you should have seen his face. What a picture. I thought I was going to die laughing, Clara. I really did.
Struth, it's nearly 1:30 in the morning. I've got to be up in a few hours. Come on, Clara. I think it's time we made tracks. It's a cold night. We don't want to be snowed in.
Hawley, get Paul and Clara's coats for them.
It's okay. I can
Hawley?
Get...
Hawley?
Yes, darling. We'll be a moment. Here you are, Paul.
Oh, thanks, old chap.
And Clara.
Thanks for a lovely night, Cora. It's been wonderful as always. We must do it again sometime. You'll have to come to ours next time.
Yes, yes, do.
Hey, that would be wonderful, wouldn't it, Hawley?
Yes, darling, it would. Wonderful.
Oh, by Jeff, it's freezing out here.
Don't come down, Cora. You'll catch your death.
Yes, you'll catch your death. Those were the last words that anyone other than her husband would say to Cora Crippen. If her friend had known, she would surely have chosen her words more carefully. The reason Hawley gave for Cora's rapid disappearance was that she had been called to America to look after an ailing relative. Some people thought it strange that within weeks, Ethel LaNeve had moved into the Crippen household. The story that she was his niece was certainly not believed by everyone who heard it. Nor was the story about how Cora had fallen seriously ill herself and was unlikely to live. In March of 1910, Hawley Harvey Crippen sent a telegram to Clara, one of the dinner party guests, on that fateful and cold winter night. It confirmed that Cora had died from her illness.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Crippen. I think I'm on the mend already. Well, keep taking those tablets, Mr. Armstrong, and you'll feel like a new man next week. I'm sure of it.
Good day, Mr. Armstrong.
Good day, and thank you again.
Another happy customer. Business is good.
Indeed it is, my darling Ethel. The best it's ever been. I know it sounds horrible, but since Cora died, I've been happier than ever.
I understand, Hawley. But you must be just a little bit sad that she passed away so young.
To be honest, Ethel, I try not to think about it. Especially when I wake up in the morning next to your lovely face, and then think of Cora. I do feel sad that I can be so happy. Sad and guilty. But life must go on, mustn't it? Life is for the living. And I've felt more alive in these past few months than ever before. Who can this be? I thought Mr. Armstrong was our last patient of the day.
Me too. I have nothing down in the diary. Nothing at all. Coming. Won't be a moment. Yes, how can I help you?
Good evening. I've come to see Dr. Crippen.
And who shall I say is calling?
Tell him it's Chief Inspector Walter Dew of Scotland Yard.
Cora Crippen's mystery disappearance, followed by an even more mysterious illness, and her subsequent death, had aroused suspicions in her closest friends. To start with, they kept these concerns to themselves. But when Crippen started to parade his new romance in public, it wasn't long before they decided to go to the police with their reservations. Chief Inspector Dew was one of Scotland Yard's finest. Tall, slim, and handsome. He was in his mid-40s, wore a smart blue suit, and over one arm he carried an umbrella. His crowning glory was his carefully manicured moustache that gave him a military bearing.
Take a seat, Inspector. How may I help you? It's about your watch, sir. We have reason to believe that all may not be quite as it seems. Well, how so? Well, we had a visit at the yard by a couple of your late wife's friends. From the Music Hall Ladies Guild, I'll bet. I'm not really at liberty to say, sir. Well, go on. Well, they think there was more to her disappearance than you are letting on. They think that there was no sick relative. They think that you might not be telling the whole truth, sir. You'd like the truth, Inspector? The truth? The whole truth? And nothing but the truth. She's not dead. She's not even ill. At least not to my knowledge.
Then where the devil is she?
I wish I could tell you, Inspector.
You're not making much sense, Dr. Crippen.
First you say your wife is looking after a sick relative in America. Then she's ill.
And then she's dead. And now you say she's risen from the dead.
But her whereabouts are unknown.
No. She never was ill, and she certainly didn't die. She ran away, Inspector.
Ran away?
Yeah, she ran away with a man. A chap called Bruce Miller. He was one of her, fancy men. A prize fighter. At least he used to be in his younger days.
Why didn't you tell anyone about this, sir?
It was too embarrassing, Inspector. You must understand. Cora, my wife, she was very domineering. She walked all over me. I had to do everything she said. I thought that everyone would laugh if they knew the truth. Poor Hawley, they'd all say. Poor little Hawley.
So you made up those lies instead?
I know I was wrong, but I thought she'd see some sense and come back. That way nobody would ever know that she'd ever left me for another man.
And when she didn't come back?
Well, that's when I had to make up the story about her becoming ill and dying. People started to ask questions about when she was returning. I needed a reason to make them realize that she never would be returning.
Yes, I see.
It all got out of hand, really. I never meant to go that far. You must understand, Inspector. I can see that you might do what you did, although I'm sure you understand it wasn't the right thing to do. Where is she now, Dr. Crippen? I think she's in Chicago. That's where he was from.
The prize fighter.
What was his name again?
Bruce Miller.
We'll have to do some checks. If you do manage to find her, Inspector, do tell her that I love her and want her to come home. I do love her dearly, despite everything. I really do.
I understand. There's only one more thing. I need to have a look at the family home. It's nothing to worry yourself about. It's purely routine, of course.
Of course, Inspector. We can go straight there now, if you like.
Dr. Crippen and Inspector Dew took a carriage across town. The journey from Oxford Street to Camden took just over 10 minutes. On the way, the two men chatted casually. Inspector Dew's initial suspicions about Crippen melted away. By the time they arrived at Hilldrop Crescent, they were more like amicable companions than a police inspector and an interviewee.
Here we are, Inspector. 39 Hilldrop Crescent.
Dr. Crippen led the inspector up the stone steps at the entrance to a 3-story Victorian terrace. Once inside, he took the inspector's coat and led him into the parlor.
Pink was her favorite color, Inspector. Pink curtains, pink wall coverings, pink drapes on the chairs. Everything was pink. It's not everyone's cup of tea, but Cora liked it. Her other love was potted palms, as you can see.
Yes, I can see what you mean.
And through here we have the dining room. And pink napkins,
Dr. Crippen.
Would you like tea and cream cake, Inspector?
That would be nice. Do you mind if I...
Be my guest. Upstairs are the bedrooms, and downstairs there's a cellar for storage. I'll call you when the tea's ready.
The inspector walked from room to room, looking for anything that might be suspicious. Dr. Crippen busied himself in the kitchen.
Inspector, tea is served.
Coming.
Very kind of you, Dr. Crippen. Milk and sugar are on the tray. Help yourself to a cream cake. They're quite wonderful, you know. I get them from the bakery on the high street.
Cigarette, sir?
No, thank you. Well, did you find any bodies, Inspector? Maybe a skeleton in the cupboard? Or a cadaver under the bed?
I'm pleased to say I didn't. It was just a quick inspection. Routine. I'm sure you understand. I need to be able to put it in my report.
Of course, I understand. You're just doing your job. Does that mean that I'm still under suspicion? Can I put this horrible episode behind me and get on with my life?
Everything seems to be in order to me, sir. Pretty much an open and shut case, as I can see. Of course, if you do hear from your wife, Dr. Crippen, I'd be grateful if you could let us know. Just for our records, you understand.
Inspector Dew and Dr. Crippen made pleasantries as they finished the tea and cake. Nothing untoward was said or implied, but Hawley had a sneaking suspicion that this might not be the last time that he would have dealings with the inspector from Scotland Yard.
I think he thought I'd murdered her, Ethel. Killed her in cold blood and hidden her body under the floorboards.
Murdered her? What, you a murderer, Hawley? Who could think such a silly thought?
We need to get away, Ethel. Just you and me. Start a new life away from all this gossip and suspicion. Maybe we could start a family. What do you think?
But where would we go? We could go live with my family for a while.
I was thinking further afield. Europe. Maybe America or Canada. A completely new start. What do you think? It would be wonderful, Ethel.
Our own house. I could pick the furnishings. Oh, promise me no more pink, Hawley.
Definitely no more pink.
When would we go?
As soon as we can. Tomorrow. Why not? Yes, tomorrow. Let's do it tomorrow, Ethel.
But what about your practice? How would we earn a living?
I have some money put away, Ethel. We can use that until I get established somewhere else. And then you can work as my secretary. Oh, Ethel, it'll be just what we need. No Cora, no stupid music hall ladies' guild, no noisy neighbors, no Scotland Yard breathing down my neck.
Yes, Hawley. Yes, 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 let's do it.
Crippen and Ethel Leneve set about making the necessary arrangements. He knew that at any moment there could be a knock on the door, a knock that would surely lead to the hangman's noose. The following day, they set off for the continent. From there, they would catch an ocean-going liner to a new life in North America. To hide their tracks, Crippen persuaded his lover to have her hair cut in a different style and to wear the clothes of a young boy. He told her that it was because other passengers would comment if they saw an unmarried couple sharing a cabin. So for the duration of the journey, Ethel Leneve would not be Crippen's lover, but his son.
Is this the booth for transatlantic tickets?
Yes, sir. Antwerp to New York. Sailing in 15 minutes and 30 seconds. To be precise, sir. No room left. Not in any class, I'm afraid.
And tomorrow? Anything sailing tomorrow?
Let me see. Antwerp to Southampton. Antwerp to Cape Town. Antwerp to Calais. Antwerp to Quebec.
And then that'll do. Yes, Quebec. Excellent.
And how many passengers will be sailing, sir?
Just two. Myself and my son.
Whilst Crippen and Leneve were preparing to set off on their journey, Inspector Dew had set off on another much shorter trip, a 15-minute hansom cab ride from Scotland Yard to Crippen's surgery in Oxford Street. His journey was not an important one. All he wanted to do was to confirm some more details. But on his arrival at Crippen's surgery, things were not quite right.
All right, I'm coming. What do you want?
I want to speak to Dr. Crippen, if you please. Dr. Hawley Harvey Crippen.
Yeah, you'll be lucky. I haven't seen him for days. Maybe even a week now. No word to me about what's going on. Just whoosh, and that's it. I tell you, you can't trust nobody these days.
In that case, may I speak with his secretary, Miss Leneve?
Nah, she's gone and all. They're both gone.
Did he leave a note or message with anyone?
No message. Nothing.
I always thought he was a stranger, that Crippen.
Called himself a doctor, eh?
An insult to the profession, if you ask me.
Thank you, you've been very helpful.
Inspector Dew had been an officer of the law for 20 years. He won his detective badge in 1887, during the height of the Jack the Ripper investigations in the East End of London. But on this occasion, it didn't need a master detective to realize that something was not quite right. Within an hour, he had his men performing a fingerprint search of 39 Hilldrop Crescent.
Inspector, I think you'd better come down into the cellar. There's something I think you should see. Over there in the corner, we lifted one of the stone slabs.
Yes, I can see, Jensen. Pass me the lantern.
Good God, Jensen. It's the remains of a human body.
The body, or what was left of it, was removed from its macabre resting place. In the cellar of Hilldrop Crescent, to the laboratory at Scotland Yard. There, experienced medical officers performed a careful analysis. They looked for anything that might provide a clue as to the identity of the corpse and how it might have reached its grisly end.
Well, Inspector Dew, it's been a difficult task. Pretty much all that remains is the flesh from the torso. All the bones have been removed. There's no head and there's no limbs.
What else can you tell me, Doctor? Can you say who it is? Is it Cora Crippen or not?
It's hard to say, but judging by the age of what's left, it would certainly fit the description. Female, middle-aged, Caucasian, dyed blonde hair. Yes, it's probably Cora Crippen, all right.
Anything else, Doctor?
Yes, there is something else. We found traces of hyoscine in sufficient quantities to indicate a lethal dose. It's safe to say that the cause of death was poisoning, Inspector.
So does that mean that it was...
Oh, yes, Inspector. Without a shadow of a doubt, the woman was murdered.
Two days later, a warrant was issued for Dr. Crippen. The warrant read, wanted for the murder and mutilation of a woman. A second warrant was issued to Ethel Leneve. The faces of the ordinary young doctor and his young lover were now on the front page of every national newspaper. But little did Inspector Dew know that they had already fled the country and were about to board a transatlantic liner to a new life in Canada.
I told you everything would be fine, Ethel. Nothing at all to worry about. Nobody suspects a thing. As far as they're concerned, we're just father and son.
But we'll have to keep it up for the whole journey, Hawley. I don't know whether I can do it.
Well, it's only for a week. The time will fly by, I promise you. Before you know it, we'll be in Quebec.
I hope you're right. I do hope you're right.
Come on, let's go up on deck and catch the sea breeze. We should be off the coast of Cornwall by now. All right, Ethel, this is the life. Just you and me and the seagulls.
And me. Sorry to intrude.
Good morning.
Captain Kendall, sorry if I startled you. I've been looking for you all morning. I'd like to welcome all the first and second class passengers in person, but I haven't had the pleasure of your acquaintance. You seem to have been held up in your quarters ever since boarding.
Oh, yes, of course. A pleasure to meet you, Captain. Robinson, that's my name. Robinson, and this is my son.
Pleased to meet you, young man.
Oh, don't mind my son, Captain. He's feeling a little under the weather. That's why we've been in our cabin.
Ah, Neptune's curse, eh? The sea has its effect on some people. Have no fear, though. It's only temporary. Won't be long before you'll find your sea legs, young man. You'll see.
I suspect you're right, Captain.
What do you think, Master Robinson?
Yes, I'm sure of it, sir.
Well, I hope you both do me the great honor at sitting at the captain's table at dinner this evening.
Well,
I won't take no for an answer.
Of course, it'll be our pleasure, Captain.
Jolly good, I'll see you then. I'll have to dash now. There's much more to my job than greeting passengers, you know. Someone has to keep this vessel pointing in the right direction. Good day to you both.
Oh my God, he knows, Hawley. I'm sure of it.
No, he doesn't. You're worrying over nothing. He didn't suspect a thing. Nothing, Eth. Absolutely nothing.
Oh yes, call it a woman's intuition, but Ethel was right.
The captain did have his suspicions. He knew that there was something wrong about Mr. Robinson and his son. He did not know exactly what it was, but he was sure that time would tell. For Harley Harvey Crippen and Ethel Leneve, the clock was ticking. The sand of time was passing quickly through the hourglass, and the days of carefree romance were numbered.
Goodness gracious me. It is. It is definitely. Jenkins, here quick.
Yes, Captain.
Look here in the newspaper. I know it's a few days old, but look at the front page. Look at this picture. Does it remind you of anyone? Anyone on board this ship?
You can't say it does, Captain.
Look closer. Imagine the men in the picture without the mustache.
Why, it's a spitting image of Mr. Robinson, down there with his son.
And imagine the woman in the picture was dressed as a young boy.
Oh, be Jesus, it could be Master Robinson, but why?
Here you are, let me read it to you. Dr. Hawley Harvey Crippen and Ethel Leneve are wanted by Scotland Yard for questioning regarding the murder of Cora Crippen of 39 Hilldrop Crescent, Camden, London.
Good God, Jenkins. We've got two murderous suspects on board.
What do we do, Captain?
Yes, well, it's too late to return to port. But what about sending a message with that newfangled Marconi thing?
Yeah, we'd have to be quick, Captain. The distance for sending messages is only 120 miles from shore, and we're nearly that far from Ireland now. We can receive messages up to 600 miles away, but...
Quick then, we don't have a minute to waste. Now here's the message. Have strong suspicion that Crippen, London cellar murderer, and accomplice are among saloon passengers. Mustache taken off. Growing beard. Accomplice dressed as boy. Voice, manner, and build. Undoubtedly a girl. Both traveling as Mr. and Master Robinson. Captain Kendall, SS Montrose.
The cable was sent immediately to Scotland Yard and handed to Inspector Dew. Within hours, the inspector was on a night train to Liverpool to catch the SS Laurentic, a fast steamer that was leaving for Quebec the following morning. Although the Montrose had a three-day head start, the Laurentic was a faster ship, and if all went as planned, would get the inspector into Quebec one day before Crippen arrived. The chase was on.
Cable arriving, Captain. We'll board you at Father Point. Please keep any information till I arrive there. Strictly confidential. Inspector Dew. Scotland Yard.
Not a word to anyone, Jenkins. If this Crippen fellow gets an inkling of what's going on, who knows what he'll resort to? He's already murdered his wife.
But what can we do, Captain? Surely we should lock him up. We can't just let him bask in the sun for the rest of the voyage.
Well, that's exactly what we will do, Jenkins. Until we know for sure that he is who we think he is, we've got to treat him like an innocent man. If he doesn't suspect anything, I'm sure we'll be fine.
Understood, sir.
Oh, one more thing. When we are within range of transmitting a message, I'd like you to send the following reply. Message received and understood. On arrival, Inspector Dew to board disguised as a pilot. Absolutely no press. Captain Kendall.
Each day, Crippen and Leneve sat on deck in the fresh Atlantic air, reading their books. He a thriller called Just Four Men, and she a romance, Ordery's Recompense, works of fiction that could not possibly compare with the real-life drama going on all around. Did they ever suspect that the crackling noise from the wireless transmitter above their heads was sending and receiving messages
that would decide their fate. Throughout the voyage, Crippen had maintained a cheerful disposition, but as the SS Montrose drew closer to the Canadian coastline, he became morose and withdrawn. Ethel noticed his change of mood.
You seem distant, Hawley. You haven't said a word for hours.
Sorry, my darling, I've been thinking.
I hope you've not been worrying yourself, my dear.
I might have to leave you once we disembark.
What do you mean, leave me?
You may want to brush up your typing skills, as I'm sure you'll find yourself a great job in Canada. I suggest you go to Toronto. I hear it's a wonderful place.
And what about you?
Oh, nothing. I'm just trying to think ahead.
Did Crippen know something was wrong? Had he seen the suspicion in Captain Kendall's eyes? Had he overheard a conversation? Could he sense the tension in the air? Did Ethel and Eve realize that the hours that they had left together were numbered? Did she too have a sense of doom? What did they think about when a small boat, carrying men in pilots' uniforms, pulled up alongside the SS Montrose?
And welcome aboard, Inspector Dew. The pilot's uniform certainly suits you. Very dashing indeed.
It sure fooled all those pesky journalists back in port. For a moment back then, I thought they were going to mob the ship.
Had they known who you were, Inspector, I think they might just have done that.
Where are they, Captain?
I think you'll find them on the upper deck. Follow me. Just round that corner, Inspector. Can you see them? In the deck chairs facing the sea, reading their books.
Yes, I can see them. Thank you, Captain Kendall. I'll take it from here.
Good morning, Dr. Crippen. Oh, Inspector Dew. Inspector Dew, good morning.
There was no attempt to escape. No struggle. No quick dash for freedom. No excuses or pleas for mercy. Just a dignified resignation that the hunt was now at an end. For just over a week, while sailing on the Montrose, Hawley Harvey Crippen and Ethel Leneve had, without their knowledge, been headline news across the world. The voyage back to England was a long one and could lead to only one thing, the trial of Dr. Crippen and Ethel Leneve for murder. Dr. Crippen and Ethel Leneve were tried separately at the Old Bailey. Because of Crippen's plea and testimony, Leneve was found not guilty on all counts and released the same day. When Dr. Crippen took to the stand to hear the judge's verdict...
And how do you find the defendant?
Guilty, Your Honor.
Hawley Harvey Crippen, you have been convicted upon evidence that you cruelly poisoned your wife, that you concealed your crime, you mutilated her body, and disposed piecemeal of her remains. You possessed yourself of her property and used it for your own purposes. It was further established that as soon as suspicion was aroused, you fled from justice. I implore you to make your peace with Almighty God. I have now to pass the sentence of the court, which is that you be taken from here to a lawful prison, and from there to a place of execution, and that you be hanged by the neck until you are dead. And may the Lord have mercy on your soul.
Ethel Leneve visited the condemned man every day of his imprisonment. Each visit was followed by a letter.
5 minutes, Dr. Crippen.
My dearest Ethel, how am I to endure? To take my last look at your dear face? What agony must I go through when you disappear forever from my eyes? God help us to be brave. We shall meet again. Forever yours, Hawley.
Dr. Crippen was executed in Pentonville Prison on Wednesday, November the 23rd, 1910. His last wish was that he could take Ethel's photograph and letters with him to the grave. Ethel Leneve sailed to New York on the day that her lover was hanged. She returned to England several years later, married, became a grandmother, and lived a long, happy, and ordinary life in Croydon, on the outskirts of London. Very few people, including her husband, knew anything about her past. She died in 1967. Inspector Walter Dew took early retirement from Scotland Yard, 3 weeks before Crippen was hanged. Many of his colleagues believed his decision was formed by the sympathy he felt for the mild-mannered killer he had brought to the hangman's gallows. Captain Kendall almost lost his own life 4 years later. By amazing coincidence, the ship he was commanding, the Empress of Ireland, sank off Father Point, Quebec, the same spot as where Crippen had been arrested, and more than 1,000 lives were lost. Kendall was rescued at the last moment and lived to the grand old age of 91.